All right, that's Morgan Wallen singing Stand By Me. I just have to get to a couple. I wish I would have, you know, seen some of these when Lorna was here. And she is a beloved, beloved, beloved writer and artist in the Twin Cities. And Amy just said, I'm just in awe. Lorna is my absolute favorite author. And if you haven't read any of her books and you want to just, and maybe you're just meeting her today via our show, she is a delicious writer. Her sense of humor is just so fantastic. Her books are so great. You will not be disappointed. We like them all. Listening to her makes me want to go back and read all of her books. You can, Amy, you can. And then Kelly wants us to know that her grandma used to give her Judith Krantz and Jackie Collins books to read when she was in middle school.
Oh, yeah.
It definitely got me reading. Totally, totally, totally. We feel the same way, Kelly. I read all those books.
You'd read racy
stuff. My older
stuff.
Sister, Gina, was... So I was a freshman and she was a senior. She was just enough older. So I would get her hand-me-downs of Rosemary Rogers, like Wicked Loving Lies and The Dove and the Wolf.
My mom gave me Flowers in the Attic.
That was epic.
And that's not romance.
Clan of the Cave Bear. She gave me that one.
Yeah, there was a
too.
Lot of sex in that one.
But I mean, you really, I think sex can get a
Flowers
young
in the
reader.
Attic is incest and horror.
Yeah, I never read that one.
Yeah, that was,
that was your mom.
Yes, yeah. That was a weird one for, but I will say that as someone who grew up reading a ton of smut books, ranging from romance to this is porn, it's a better way to engage with early developmental sexuality than videos and hearsay.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we didn't have any of that.
Yeah. And it makes you think about your interiority as a developing sexual person.
Right. That's so true.
Yes. And someone else just said, good Lord, Carol sounds so good. She does not sound like a 90-year-old woman, soon to be 91. She also, I mean, I just think of her because my mom's 88.
Yeah.
And, you know, my mom keeps herself, she's eaten healthy, she's done everything right her whole life, you know, and Carol is just a little bit more vibrant. She's just has more of a little more pep in her step.
Well, she hasn't had a stroke like your
mom. I know. I was waiting for you to state the obvious.
Hello.
So thank you everyone for your emails and, you know, it was almost a year. It'll be a year in July when we got our Gracie last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in New York City. It was just last year, wasn't it?
It was 2 years ago.
And Roger Goodell was the NFL commissioner, was sitting at the table right behind us. And we couldn't figure out if it was Robert Redford. How do we know that guy? How do we know that guy?
And then I looked and looked and looked. And I'm like, he's the football guy. And then you knew the name.
Yeah, Roger Goodell. And so tonight is the big, big NFL draft. And people in Minnesota... This is a big deal to us because maybe we're going to get a quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we got a quarterback coach picking a quarterback. That is the one thing I picked up from the sports pages today because I read Patrick Royce's story.
Yes.
He wrote about Al Shaver.
Oh, yes.
Passing away yesterday. But Will Reeve, it seems like all the morning shows have NFL fever. And
everyone does.
Will Reeve has a little report from GMA.
Good morning here in Detroit, but these fans and I are trying to show off that grit that this city is so well known for. And just hours from now, behind us on that stage over there, lives will change, dreams will come true, and each of the 32 NFL fan bases will convince themselves that they've got the guy who's going to make this year their year. At the very top of the draft, it's a formality at this point. The Bears and Caleb Williams, a match made in heaven. They've been slotted to select the Heisman winner for years now. He's going to go number one overall. At number two, consensus is building around reigning Heisman winner Jaden Daniels. He's the quarterback who everybody's talking about, and I got the chance to talk with him, so take a look.
It's been widely reported and assumed that Caleb Williams will go one to the Bears, and then widely reported and assumed you'll go number two to the Commanders. If you do go second overall in the draft, what would that mean to you?
You know, whether it's Washington or where, like you said, a team trades up or something like that. Obviously, that's where I was meant to be. That's where God placed me to be. So I'm going to, you know, embrace it. You know, I'm blessed to be in this position.
The Patriots need a quarterback as well. Will they take Drake May? How about J.J. McCarthy, the reigning national champion from Michigan? Where is he going to go? It's QB heavy at the top, but there are gems to be found everywhere, and we, as NFL fans, can find them all together tonight in primetime, 8 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, ABC. Everybody's excited, right?
Let's go!
Our brother station has a whole mess of people down at the Fillmore for the draft tonight.
For a draft party. And can follow Score North on Twitter, listen to Score North, and they will give you all the insight about what everything is happening tonight with the Vikings. So you think the guy that he just talked to is going to be our pick?
I feel like that's what Grant told us, and that's what I've overheard from Casey.
What's his name?
J.J. McCarthy. But people are, you know, I don't know if that's going to happen. But if the Patriots, what's to say the Patriots wouldn't pick him as a quarterback before that other guy? I don't know enough, but I keep hearing the name J.J. McCarthy, and it seems like it's expected that the Vikings will draft him because here's the accidental sports talk for me. That's our number one mission as a football team.
Of course,
must
it is.
Get quarterback.
Well, we have to. We saw what happened. Isn't the name of our coach McCarthy?
McCartney. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's in the stars.
Yeah. Well, look at that. Kevin McCartney. This is McCarthy.
But you know who I am.
Yeah.
Griffith.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, I've had years of problems. Caramel.
Right.
It's all that.
The draft is so fun to watch because it's just I love watching like. Guys who spend their entire life trying to do one thing, and then there's just a full hour of all their dreams coming true.
And watching the families at home if they aren't all there. It really is. It's like it was fun watching the WNBA draft.
It's like an injection of positivity. Yeah. No one's disappointed.
No, you're right. Except for sometimes the Vikings.
Yeah. Well, and I love how Will Dramek said lives will change, and they do, and it is genuinely exciting, and apparently the Vikings draft room, this is just from a minute ago, is quote-unquote very tense right now.
Yeah, because we are one of the teams that are guaranteed nothing but need everything.
Mm. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. You know your football, Ellie.
No, I don't. Compared to people who know football, that I do not. But I do love the Vikings, and we are in a very interesting and precarious place within our draft order, but we need so much.
It would just be nice to have. I'm ready.
Yeah.
We're ready. Yeah. Waited a long time. Okay. Shogun finale was last night. Lori and I watched it.
It was actually Tuesday.
But we watched it last night.
We watched it last night.
No spoilers. I'm saving it for this weekend.
No, we won't say a spoiler at all. That was one amazing, beautiful, lyrical.
And masterclass in acting. I'm sorry, Anna Sawai, who plays Mary Kosama, the translator. She's amazing in it. And you know, she's like been acting since she was maybe.
What's her name, Lori?
Her name is Anna Sawai, Sawai. She was in Apple's Monarch, Legacy of Monsters. She was in Giri Haji.
Yeah,
which is a great.
She was in Pachinko.
She's a wonderful Japanese actress, but as a translator and the fact that she's acting, she's hearing, speaking, it's the show is so true to the Japanese story. It is not in any way white savior with the character of Blackstone. It's very much stays true to the whole feudal dynasty, the story, the guy who plays Toranaga.
He's amazing.
He's the best.
He's amazing. And he's always like that guy in a movie, but he's really got a starring role.
You'd recognize him from John Wick.
Yes, John Wick, exactly.
He was amazing. It was amazing. And you're right, Lori. She was amazing.
Yeah, she's going to collect everything as far as awards. And I think that show, I think I was getting mixed up that the Game of Thrones guys were involved with Shogun. I don't think, but it gives.
They're Game on three body problem. That's what.
That's what it is.
Okay.
But Shogun reminds me of Game of Thrones in that the epic storytelling, and in that third episode, which is like one long continuous battle scene, it really is
epic.
It's rich.
And
it's rich show.
And on the new TV, you know, that we got last week. Oh, my gosh.
It's something else.
It was just gorgeous.
Yeah.
It was just gorgeous. Shogun, we just can't recommend enough. It's on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
That was one. Yeah.
And you could, if you have cable, you could just DVR it on FX.
Yeah,
if because it was on that. That's how we recorded it. And I would also, that Gary Haji is a really great show. I think it was a BBC Netflix thing, and Anna is in it, and also the guy we didn't like, he played one of the detectives, I think, in Gary Haji, but it's sort of like a, goes back and forth between London and Tokyo, and it's involves the Yuzuko, the mafia.
Yakuza?
Yeah.
Yakuza, yeah, the Japanese mob. Epic story, you know, two season.
So good.
So she's really good. So she started acting when she was a kid. There was a Hollywood Reporter story about her. Then she was in a Japanese girl group, kind of a K-pop, J-pop kind of a thing, and then got back into acting. But she's just
amazing.
Wonderful.
That's just such a beautiful show. Mm-hmm. If people are looking for something really fun to binge. Yeah. All right, we got to go. It is time for Random Thoughts. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, it's Lori and Julia here for Chanhassen Dinner Theaters, where Beautiful, the Carol King musical, is blowing everyone away. And if you don't have tickets yet, get them, because
You're not going to have many choices of dates if you don't get on this one.
It's just so good. It's a fun Broadway musical story about Carol King, all the things we never knew about her and what a prolific songwriter she was before Tapestry, which we all remember that.
Yes.
And they just do it with such, Monet Sable is so good in it.
It's the whole cast. I mean, it's such a big cast. It's such a great show. There's so much good music. The way the story is told, very much like Jersey Boys, but Brooklyn Girl. And it's just fun. And people are going back for repeats.
Yes.
They're like, that's so much show. There's so much music. I need to see this again.
You're going
to
love it. Also, be sure to check out the great concerts at Chan. Gladys Knight and the Paul McCartney and the Wings, Seals and Crofts, The Carpenters, ChanhassenDinnerTheater.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday, so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
You know, I saw this story the other day.
Did you ever notice that? You know, sometimes I wonder what would happen if...
And now, Julia's random thoughts.
He looks like that puppet. I don't know. He's had cheeky implants. It's just random. That's all it is.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back. Okay, so today, if you're wondering what to celebrate, as one does.
Let me open my banana. Let me crack a banana.
It's lingerie day.
Oh, lovely.
Mm-hmm. And according to our packing thing, Minnesota's packed the leg. Lori just looked at her bra.
Non-existent.
She didn't wear one today. Okay, so there's that.
But I think I have pretty underwear on.
I do.
Yeah.
I know I do. So that's that. It's just, isn't that funny? That's just so funny that we just are both like that. There was a story today that came out, a national survey about what are the top places for writers and librarians. And Minneapolis actually ranked third in the country, best place for writers and
librarian.
So we outranked Chicago in the Midwest in terms of average wages for technical writers, $84,000 a year average. And we are about $2,000 higher what we pay in the Twin Cities than you would find even Chicago, where the expense of living is higher.
Mm-hmm.
Second best employment opportunities for librarians. And at the same time, there are approximately 700 jobs for aspiring writers, authors, editors within the metro area, which puts us way up there. So, yeah. Of course, the top places are L.A. and New York because of opportunity, meetings, things like that. But we're very high.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a fun.
Yeah, especially if you can write technically or write. I have a friend who writes marketing manuals. Yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess somebody does have to write all this stuff.
No, someone has to do all that. Yeah. So that I thought that was kind of interesting. If you ever wondered what you might have in common with Richard Nixon, which I know comes up all the time.
I think about it constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly.
What are you talking about?
What do I have
about?
In common with Richard Nixon? His favorite food, cottage cheese and ketchup.
This has got to be from the machine.
It is. But I kind of loved how random that was because it grossed my kids out more than life.
It's so vulgar. Just the idea of that.
Cottage
is
cheese and ketchup. But it was
vulgar.
Our salsa.
And you're adding wetness to cottage cheese. That's
it's just
I was adding
bad.
Sugar to it.
Yeah.
If you think about it, ketchup is sugar.
I'm a salt and pepper on my cottage cheese kind of person.
I used to be a lemon pepper person. I mean, cottage cheese used to rule.
A lemon pepper. That's a...
Lemon pepper is an old
You're wrecking
spice.
Cottage cheese by
For
putting
you.
Ketchup in
Everybody
it.
Has their own thing.
Oh, boy.
Okay,
Next
so
thing you know, you're going to be putting relish on top of it and calling it a hot dog.
I really won't, but I put pickles in it. I do put pickles. Oh, pickles and ketchup is the best in cottage cheese. That all works. I'm sorry.
No.
Listen, people. We didn't have much to choose from in our organic household.
It wasn't World War II.
Well, my mother wouldn't give us sugar. Okay, so this I thought you would love, Lori, because this is so you, because there's rules to foot traffic, and especially in a major city, if it's a walking city, let's take New York, for example, some rules, some etiquette rules on busy walkways. I mean, you go to busy cities, there's some etiquette rules.
You don't stop in the middle of a place where people are crossing two different directions and stop like right in the middle and stop traffic.
Right.
You move to the side. People are like,
and you move. And if you're a slow walker, you stay to the right, like on those walkways at the airport.
Just like driving.
Yeah. You stay to the right.
Left is fast. Right is slow.
That's a weird question. If you went to the UK, would you need to switch the side of the road you instinctually walk on?
No, I don't think so.
No, because we were there.
Yeah.
No.
People.
No, but that's
still,
funny.
It is.
No.
Mm-mm.
No.
Okay.
But driving a car is interesting.
Yeah, that one, it's very tricky.
That is.
Tricky business. That's why there are trains.
Three is a crowd. So if you're walking in a city and there's three of you, you can't do three across.
No.
Figure out a single file situation or have two and one, you know, but it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Pick which friend you like more and move along.
That's right.
No, one that can keep up with you. Yeah. Lori and I have a power walking thing that we would ditch a lot of people, actually.
It was a perfect way to ditch people, actually.
And we didn't mean it that
rude.
Way. But we didn't mean it that way. I liked getting the exercise and moving faster. You just wanted to get to the next place. And exercise was a bonus.
Yeah.
It was an exercise.
And I can't help it that one of my leg lengths is two of yours.
It
so
is.
You feel like you're moving faster.
I do. I do. Mm-hmm. Because to keep up with you. But I did. Mm-hmm. And I do.
Yeah.
Okay. This is. So Oreos.
This is haiku.
I know. I did and I do. Oreos is going to come out with a new limited flavor. It is going to be Sour Patch Kids Oreo. Yes or no?
No.
No, I'll take it. I love
I'd
Sour
be interested.
Patch Kids.
I'd be interested in this. I think so. May 6th.
This is
going to
be a short batch.
I love chocolate covered Sour Patch Kids, so it's not scary to me.
Oh, I've never had those.
They're good.
Oh, my word. All
I'm
right.
putting that in the ketchup and cottage cheese category.
Lori, you don't like to try anything new. She's got rice and beans and a cheese tilita. Brittany, what's happening out there, Ellie, with the traffic? We are delighted today to invite Dr. Stephanie Covington to the Lori and Julia Book Club. Dr. Covington, I don't know, Dr. Stephanie, should we call you Stephanie Covington or Dr. Covington?
How about Stephanie?
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
And just a little on your background, which is big. You're a nationally recognized clinician, author, and organized consultant and lecturer. You are a pioneer in the field of addiction issues and recovery. You've developed innovative, gender-responsive, and trauma-informed approach to treatment needs of women and girls that results in effective services in the public and private sector. And we're really in awe of you. And people might know that I think it's the 30th anniversary of A Woman's Way Through the 12-Step Program that you wrote with Hazelton, which is right here in Minnesota. And just as a way, because women in recovery, were being treated as men in recovery programs, and you saw a need, as I believe that you're in recovery as well. So
that's right.
Yeah, thank you for being with us. And your book is called, the latest book, because you have many, Hidden Healers, The Unexpected Way Women in Prison Help Each Other Survive. And I understand that, you know, you're a big advocate for women and addictions and trauma and helping people through all that. But about 20 years ago, I understand, kind of by fluke, you got interested in what happens in women's prisons. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, that's right. I was working and focusing on women with addictive disorders, which led me to understanding trauma because of the connection in the lives of so many women. And then I had the experience of meeting a warden in North Carolina when I was a speaker at a conference. And I was so taken with the idea that I hadn't been thinking about women in prison. I hadn't thought about them, that I'd been doing all this work around women, but the women in prison were totally invisible to me. And I said that to her, and she said, well, that's just true in the world. Over the next year, I talked her into letting me go and stay in the prison for a couple of days. And long story short, she was getting ready. She couldn't get permission, so she said, I'm getting ready to leave this job. I'll let you do it. And that changed, that changed the trajectory of my work life, and it really changed my life. And so this latest book, Hidden Healers, is really the book I've always wanted to write, is to give, I interviewed 22 women who are formerly incarcerated, and I wanted to write a book about what happens from the moment a woman gets on a bus to prison till she gets out. What is her journey like, and what can we all learn from that?
And what, you know, you have 22 different women who are part, and your book is very good. It's so different from
I'm thinking about the time we had the author of Orange is the New Black on, that woman, and it was her sort of her personal experience. And but, you know, it was, again, maybe, I don't know, did you feel that glamorized prison to some degree?
Well, I think that Piper's book, Orange is the New Black, was good.
Yeah.
And she pointed out in the book that also she was a woman of privilege. She was an educated white woman with resources and supportive family. And then they made the TV show, which I think the first season was okay. And it just got more and more sensationalized.
Yeah.
And so part of the reason I wanted to write this book is to have the women's words and stories about what's real. In fact, I interviewed a couple of women who had been in prison with Piper Kerman, and they have started a group called the Real Women of Orange.
I love that.
I love that.
I mean, in just kind of talking about all the misconceptions that we have, because we have no idea what goes on.
There's a real lack of even thinking about people in prison in this country, and yet it is something that we spend as a country a lot of money and a lot of resources on, and to what end sometimes you think?
Well, that is part of the issue. If we just talk about money and not just about people, most states spend more on their criminal justice system than they do on their educational system.
Yeah.
And they spend this on a system where people very often come out in worse shape than how they went in.
Mm-hmm.
So we should care about it, even from a financial standpoint. Then if we talk about it from a people standpoint, you know, those of us who are out here in the community living the free world, we really don't know what goes on inside. And what goes on inside can be really challenging and horrific. Mm. And particularly for the women, I mean, just think about the majority of these women have been abused and traumatized before they went in. Then they go into a system where the standard operating practices re-traumatize them.
Mm-hmm.
So think about a woman who's a rape survivor. She goes into prison and they're going to do a cavity search.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how humiliating, how frightening. There are just so many things that happen that are very challenging for the women.
And what do you think, I mean, what is the first step that if you were just somebody that's listening to this, or maybe you knew somebody, I knew somebody who was in Chowchilla State Prison in California. And I mean, she was a woman who'd been traumatized, sexually abused, mm-hmm. got involved with drugs, you know, yep. got involved with the wrong guy, found herself backed in a corner, driving the getaway car yes. for robbing a liquor store. And she gets right. like 10 years in prison, and she'd had no, it really seemed excessive. But because she was, the only thing that she really had, though, was that she had people in her life who would stock her commissary account.
Yeah.
But otherwise, exactly. she just said, I'm just counting my time to get out of here and keeping my nose down. And she just, mostly her letters that we traded back and forth were about memories of things that we had together or in common.
Right.
Because she didn't want to talk about that.
Right. Well, and one of the things you just mentioned, I mean, there's several things you just mentioned. One is you were writing letters. So yeah. if you know someone on the inside, write to them.
Mm-hmm.
Help get money on the books so they can get commissary. It's really powerful when people are isolated and on the inside to know that somebody cares. Somebody yeah. outside has not forgotten about them. And so many of the women that are in there are there because they were an accessory to a crime. They didn't actually commit it,
mm-hmm.
but they were. That's how she got her 10 years,
yeah.
which seems outrageous. And so some of the things we can do on the outside, if we know somebody, like I said, we can write to them. We can make sure there's money on the book.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, you know, in Hidden Healers, I mentioned things we can all do, such as you can donate books to the library. You can become a pen pal to someone you don't even know. You can look at who you're voting for in your community and what's their belief about the criminal justice system. How are they voting?
Mm-hmm.
And so there are many things we can do even though we're outside here.
And you, thank you for those, because I think that's because Lori and I have a book club, and this is a great idea for some of our books where we need to get them to go to Shakopee. You know, we have a women's
prison. Exactly.
But I do remember that I was like, I didn't want to tell anybody that I knew someone, a woman in prison.
Right.
Because I just was like, I don't know.
Shame or something?
Yeah,
or?
But there's very much a thing of like, well, if you're in prison, you probably did something and you belong there. Mm-hmm. And you kind of as a way of just dismissing somebody outright. And I didn't want this person to be dismissed that way to me, so I wouldn't bring it up.
Right. And think of the shame that families have. It sounds like it was a friend. I don't know if it was a family member. We know that 1 in 5 families have a family member who's involved in the criminal justice mm-hmm. system. And none of us know that because nobody will talk about it.
Right.
When the women are on the inside and have children, often the family say their mother's sick, she's gone away someplace. A lot of them cover up the fact that the mother's in prison, family shame, and then the children feel so ashamed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I've learned, and I'm sure you can tell by the women in Hidden Healers, when these women survive because they help each other, and when they come out, let me tell you, these are the people I want for my neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
These are women who change their lives, who have little to no resources on the inside, but find creative ways to help other women who are in really stressful situations. Our ideas about who's in there are really warped.
You know, and Stephanie, I think it's so lovely that, you know, after, you know, going at kind of being embedded in a women's prison, how it did change the trajectory of your mission in life and things that you wanted to do. And here you are writing a book, uplifting the voices of these women and talking about, you know, Hidden Healers. It's really and it's called An Unexpected Ways Women in Prison Help Each Other Survive. It's really fascinating, you know, from the very beginning where we start to think about prisons were always made for men and like the toilet paper mm-hmm. situation. And it's all about men. And then we just throw women in there and just treat them like men. And, you know, it's fascinating. And I think it's really interesting because, like you said, we don't know anything about it. We don't think about this.
No, we are paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's in our communities. People are coming out, but we don't know anything about it. And that also, anytime you have a system that's closed where people are not paying attention, bad things can happen.
Yeah.
I appreciate this book. I mean, I appreciate knowing about this as well.
Yeah, it really is eye-opening, too. And I think your book is very important, and I'm glad you wrote it, quite frankly.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. And I'm really glad you asked me to be on your show, because I know a lot of book clubs only talk about fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not so much about nonfiction. And particularly, this is a hard topic.
Right.
You know, on one hand, we should know more. On the other hand, we don't want to know anything.
It is. Our criminal legal system is as much a part of our society as, you know, 911 and hospitals and schools and our churches and everything.
And our taxpayer dollars, be concerned. I love that, knowing that, you know, and I also think your work with addiction and trauma.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to you today on A Woman's Way Trauma Healing on Sun and Moon podcast today on my way to work. And how you talk about how alcohol and addiction affects women different from men, and all the work you've done with Hazelden. You're fascinating. You're fascinating. We don't have enough time for you. But because you really...
Thank you.
And just giving us simple things to think about. You know, we spend more money on this than we do on education. And that always seems to be such a hot button. And we don't talk about what's happening here with people in our prison system. This is... Thank you. Thank you for your time.
You're very welcome. And, you know, when I go into the prisons, I ask the warden what percentage of the women could be supervised in the community. And even the most conservative wardens tell me 75% of the women could be out.
Yeah.
They're not at risk to us. Mm-hmm. We're not unsafe. We're not in a risky situation.
Yeah.
So we have to rethink who's in there and why.
Yep.
And it's always the most marginalized women.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, people, pick this up. Hidden Healers. We appreciate you coming on today and the changes that you're trying to make and highlighting what goes on. And I feel like you're going to change the world. You already have with all your books.
I don't know about changing the world. Maybe I can make a little difference here and there.
I think you do. Thank you for your time. Dr. Stephanie Covington. The book is Hidden Healers. We do have, two copies that we can give away. Call us at 651-641-1071. It is fascinating read about something we know pretty much all of us nothing about. Hidden Healers. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. What is the meaning of this, Lori? What is the meaning of this? Who won our books, first of all?
Yeah.
Ellie, who won the books?
Well, first of all, we have Lori spelled the exact same way.
Yeah.
And we also have Deborah.
Lori and Deborah.
In Hopkins and Burnsville.
All right, nice. They've got the books.
Mm-hmm.
Hidden Healers. All right, now let's move on.
All right, let's move on. So, you know, last week, Duchess Meghan of Harry and Meghan slowly released 50 jars of her strawberry jam from American Riviera Orchard.
Limited edition.
Limited, but all two. And it's been slowly trickling. Like, she does like maybe two a day. This week, Chrissy Teigen and Kris Jenner got one. And then they do, maybe they're doing a social media post. It's brilliant marketing. Okay.
The slow release of jam on the Montecito Riviera. Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, she's not in big production yet, probably. Who the hell knows? I love it because it's got the British media gnashing their teeth.
Okay.
But what really I need you to Hollywood speak is yesterday on Buckingham Palace Shop's Instagram account, they shared a video promoting a royal
jam
strawberry preserve.
First of all, I think the whole thing, releasing two jars or two jars.
I don't know if that's what she did. I just said that. But it was like 50 jars initially went out to...
Just influencers, basically.
Mega influencers.
Yeah.
And anyway, the video, there's a woman, there's the Mozart is playing and a woman's hand is shown slathering the jam on a crumpet. And I just thought... Well played, Buckingham Palace. Well played.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love some subtle jam shade.
I mean, really, we're jamming out here.
Yeah, we are.
Jamming out here. I've let this whole jam thing go over my head because I'm not that interested in it, but I get it.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
It's and silly.
It's but not really, because it's almost like a wink of the Buckingham Palace shop, whoever runs that Insta account, because seriously, the British tabloids have lost their minds over how dare she
make jam and send them to influencers.
Yes,
from the Montecito Riviera,
right?
No less,
right?
I mean, new location.
They have been losing their mind. So I felt like Buckingham Palace doing that was just kind of a wink and a nod, and you know, somebody winking and nodding to Harry and Meghan that they like them. We see you,
yeah.
And they knew that the British. It doesn't matter what they do because the British tabloid. There's so many people that just think that Harry and Meghan have ruined everything.
Yeah,
when really, and in fact, William blew it with his brother. He had the best thing going and he got jelly of his baby brother because his baby brother doesn't wear the crown. He can't help it where you're born. You can't help the birth order. This is the way it is, Wills. Deal with it, knucklehead.
Okay, I have to just ask you something. Yeah. And we also read that Prince Charles really...
He's not doing well.
And he's not doing well.
This is why I think Buckingham Palace came out right away and addressed that he had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't want anybody digging.
Yep.
Unlike Kensington Palace, which has been all kinds of just disorganized.
Second generation, William, Catherine. Yeah.
William.
Yeah.
The palace, the royal family used to operate as one, yep, under Queen Elizabeth. Now, mm-hmm, we got two houses. We got William, the king to be, and poor King Chuck, who might not be the king that long. According to reports, his cancer was way worse than they've let on.
He looks frail in every public appearance.
But that's why he shows up at Buckingham Palace. We see him out and about. He is going along with his mother's thing. To be seen is to be believed. Tantrum baldy pants William over there is doing everything wrong. So, because he's panicking. He thought he would be able to
have some fun for a while.
Yes.
He's going to have to be king. Oh, how horrible.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Arena shake. List of potential boyfriends includes Tom Cruise.
Okay, so Arena Shake.
She's famous, good-looking, and rich.
She is the mother of Bradley Cooper's, and they share a daughter who's, mm-hmm, maybe 4 years old,
mm-hmm,
and who's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And they share a daughter, and she tried to go out with Tom Brady. She models sometimes. I feel like feels so desperate to me. I don't know why she's this beautiful.
This is a desperate story.
She's just desperate.
This is a desperate story. She's 38, which, you know, would give a gold digger pause. 38.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would.
She doesn't look 38. I'll give
her that. Course not.
Here's the quote. She's shopping, but her dating pool is tiny. She needs famous, good looking, and money. How many of those are there? 5 or 10 guys?
I mean, I would doubt that Bradley Cooper would be interested in their daughter getting associated with Tom Cruise because
in Scientology.
And because she's still young and she's six, it's all.
He's going to put the kibosh. He's going to say, Arena, drop him off the list when she shows him her shopping list.
I have someone else who's interested in Tom Cruise.
Who?
Richard Simmons, is working on his own biopic.
Bad idea, Richard.
All right. He made it crystal clear that he's not on board with the Pauly Shore biopic. This is what he tweeted. I just read that a man I don't know is writing my biopic starring Pauly Shore. I do not approve this movie. I'm in talks with major studios to create my own biopic with some help. Wait for this movie. And then she said, who should play me? Tom Cruise.
Oh,
LOL.
Geez.
I thought that was kind of funny.
But are there only 5 or 10 famous, good looking, and rich men in the world? That can't be true.
That can't be true. There's
You know who I saw? I watched
that. Okay, wait a minute. Did you hear what you just said?
That's right. Famous, good looking, and rich.
They just need to be rich. Find any minor millionaire.
There's a lot of good working.
No,
you could go for an oligarch.
I like her list.
Oil magnets.
I like her
Tell
list.
Tell me who's on her list.
Famous, good looking, and rich. And there's only 5 or 10 of those guys.
She wants looks, Ellie.
Yeah.
Oh, don't we all?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good luck, Arena.
Yeah, she wants to enjoy.
And, you know,
I
watched Millionaire Matchmaker, the Patty Stanger.
Oh, you
Stanger,
did?
And Nick Vial is on it. And right away, a reject from Hannah's Bachelor was on, and Gigi Golnessi from The Shahs of Sunset.
Was it any good?
I'll watch another episode. I felt very recycled.
Okay, I missed some
and
reality.
And not in the best way
All
possible.
All right, fine.
Anyway.
All right. Well,
they're recycling the Bravo people.
Yes, they are.
And ABC.